Welcome to the Post-Christian Podcast. Our goal is to reframe, simplify, and focus on our mission to make disciples in a post-Christian culture. We discuss reaching new people and raising up leaders while removing the barriers of churchianity. I'm Eric Bryant, one of the executive pastors at Gateway Church in Austin, author of Not Like Me, and resource provider at ericbryant.org. Today, I'm with an old friend, friends since the early 90s, church planting up in Seattle, Dave Bruskus. So good to see you, Dave.
Hey, Eric. Great to see you. Great to be with you today.
Yeah, well, I'm really eager to learn from you and, you know, one of the regional executive directors for Acts 29 and hear what some of your churches are doing in the midst of trying to reach what's becoming a more and more post-Christian America, but also in the midst of that, a pandemic, racial reckoning, like all that's been happening these last 18 months. Just share a little bit, maybe some of the highlights, some of the challenges of church planting through Acts 29 in these last 18 months or so.
Yeah, I'd be glad to do that. And you know, if you were to look at the region I'm responsible for, Eric, it's kind of the center part of the country. So I oversee our churches and serve our churches that are in Nebraska, Kansas, Western Missouri, Oklahoma, and Texas, about 130 churches. And there were differences that happened over the past year, depending on the local context of those churches, but there were some themes that were consistent. One was church planting slowed down quite a bit, only because there was so much uncertainty regarding the duration of the pandemic and the financial implications. We did have in the DFW area where I live, we had two churches that planted in the midst of the pandemic, like literally the week after everything shut down. They went ahead and started online services, and then one of the churches gathered outside in the Texas weather, which is saying something. They gathered outside in the spring, summer, into the fall, and both of them seem to be doing all right. But you know, I would say overall, the pandemic put a pause on church planting, and then you throw in so much turmoil that our church has experienced in the past 18 months, whether that was pandemic policies or just the politics of a really brutal general election, so much of the social issues that we're working through. And so I can tell you that I think there's going to be growing momentum as we move forward to plant new churches. But I can also tell you from all the pastors I work with, everyone's exhausted. So you've got this weird scenario unfolding where you have members of churches and participants in churches kind of re-engaging and coming back with some enthusiasm. And then you have pastors and leaders that are just exhausted. So, you know, I think the short term might be a little bit rough. I will say this, this is another trend that we saw happen in our churches. The core of the core was so faithful during the pandemic. I heard over and over again, giving increased, you know, and participation went up in ways that were really unexpected. Then I've also heard that there's been a steady stream of people coming to the doors, really seeking answers, almost as if this pandemic eroded every bit of confidence they had in things that you know, weren't stable, and they're interested in Jesus. But there's also this sense of the people in between, those who are the most committed to the core, and new people coming through the door are kind of gone to the wind. And so it's going to be really interesting to see where we go from here and what happens next.
It really will. I mean, I think that description of these, you know, 130 churches that you are working with and serving is a really good microcosm of what's happening. I mean, even in our own church here in South Austin, you know, we've been meeting in person since September. It's been hard. You know, there've been fewer people. Rules changing, you know, the election and all the things that we've been going through. So we're tired, and we're encouraging our staff to really rest this summer. When you're off, be truly off, you know. But what's funny is, you know, we'll still get the messages, hey, when are you guys going to start meeting again? It's been almost a year,
man,
that we've been meeting.
We really learned the extent of our communication channels, didn't we? You know,
yeah, we sure
no matter
did.
How much we blasted everything out that we wanted to through every channel we could think of, there's still people like, do we still have a church there? You know, are you guys still meeting? And yeah, we've had all kinds of questions like that as well. So what a challenging season.
It is. I wonder if, as you've talked to the pastors you're serving, have you got a sense of who makes up that committed core, and what was it about them that kept them so committed? Like, are you seeing like this, these are the folks who were already in leadership. These are the folks who already knew how to spend time with God. Like, are there certain characteristics that you've seen?
I think that's a fair assumption you just made. I think it was probably the more mature people in the church, but I think there were a couple of factors that set them apart. Maybe the most significant being ongoing connection to small groups during the pandemic. In other words, they weren't Sunday only or large gathering only folks. And so I'm wondering if maybe what the group of people who hasn't come back were those that were by and large just kind of coming on Sundays and now are finding that need that they felt was being met by Sundays now being delivered in a digital format and not in person. But yeah, I would say that you're absolutely right. I would say that the two things that really were telltale signs of that group, maybe prototypical characteristics, they were serving in some meaningful way before the pandemic hit, and they were deeply connected relationally in the church. And it seems like those things just carried on, even if the service was a little bit more informal because everybody wasn't gathering together. There were people bringing meals to each other. They were caring for the sick that were, you know, infected by COVID. There were all kinds of things that just kept happening, even if the official programming of the church was limited.
Yeah, no, that's really good. I think similar with us, one of the things that I really kind of struggled with or just kind of came to realize is how many of our people really, you know, Sunday was their only connection to God. And it was the people who had learned to start spending that time with Him and were, like you said, connected or even saw themselves as responsible for taking care of people that really kept them in some ways, not just kept them growing and connected, but I think they grew even more. You know, they felt like they were part of helping us get through this. Whereas others, you know, we just started trying to be really intentional about, you know, helping our folks learn to worship on their own and not just worship on Sundays, you know, learning to sing in the car and have those connections with God throughout the week through the scriptures and prayer. One thing too for us is we had some, you know, kind of neat things that happened in spite of the challenges. Moving online, it's gotten people that didn't know how to get online, wouldn't have ever gotten online, gotten them online. We have multiple campuses here in the Austin area that can all gather together to pray on Zoom, you know, and so prayer has kind of popped up in more places and more often. We have some people, I don't know if you found this in your churches, but some people who used to come maybe once or twice a month, don't come that often now, but they listen every single week because they're used to being online. But let's talk about the people who are coming, those that are visiting, those that are kind of searching. What are some of the common themes that your pastors are seeing or that you're thinking we should be ready for as people do start to perhaps darken the doors of a church they haven't been to in a long time or ever before?
Yeah, that's such a good question to ask ourselves in this season, I think, Eric. You know, I would say there's a couple of categories. There are people that were de-churched. There are people who came back and said, hey, I came as a kid. I was involved in church in a youth group and then went away to college. And, you know, this is 10, 15 years after that experience. And I think, again, just the pandemic and all that's happened, all the unsettling, destabilizing things that we've been through, an insurrection in the Capitol and things like that over the past year really have shaken people up. And so their thing is, I need to reconnect to God who is unchanging. And so they're de-churched people, they're unchurched. We do have people who've come up and just said, hey, I need to figure out who this Jesus guy is because, you know, all of a sudden I need to take life more seriously. So I would say that the vast majority of folks, probably in our context, are maybe it's 50-50, de-churched and unchurched. Yeah. Then we've also seen something that's really interesting is some churches have closed down, sadly, in this pandemic. Others still aren't open, even though, you know, as you're talking about, your church in Austin has been open since September. There's some weird migrations, and again, this is anecdotal, Eric, going on from probably churches that I would say are just probably, if you put them on a spectrum, more mainstream denominational churches and probably more progressive politically and maybe even theologically that still aren't opened up. And we're seeing folks from those backgrounds come and say, hey, we just feel like we need to be in church. And they're not necessarily leaving where they're coming from, but they want an in-person live experience. And so that's an interesting phenomenon. So I would say, so what do we do? What do we do with that? I think we really need to do well with the basics. I mean, I think we really need to go back to the basics. Don't assume anything. Don't assume that anyone knows who Jesus is or what the gospel is. And don't assume that people even understand how to go about basic rhythms of spiritual formation. So I think it's a really great time relationally and through content to just reintroduce people to Christianity 101 and and move forward in that path. What do you think? I mean, what are you seeing there?
Yeah.
How would you regard that? How would you answer that question?
Yeah, I think that's actually what you said is really a good way to frame it. I even think there's a sense of like people are just exhausted, they're overwhelmed, and they want to just simplify, you know, uncomplicate things. And I do think God and that connection to him helps us do that. I mean, when Jesus summarized the entire, you know, law of 613 laws with love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself, there's something really tangible about that is, okay, in spite of what's happening around me, I just need to love God and love people, right? I just need to be a part of bringing more of heaven to earth everywhere I go. And I do wonder too, as you're navigating, you know, helping these pastors in different places, you know, are you seeing some of the things that are helping navigate the culture wars that seem to be really on everything? You know, you can send out a positive tweet and then an hour later discover you're actually aligned with something you didn't know you were aligned with. You know, how have you seen churches do this well, navigating this and having unity around, maybe it is around the basics, but have you seen some good examples?
Yeah. And if I were to tell you, there's a, you know, what I would say is the most troubling trend maybe in the 30 years that I've been involved in ministry, and some of those with you, and those were some of the best years I had. There's more disunity and division in the church among people who could take the same doctrinal statement and say, we sign off on this. So it seems that most of the fighting that I've observed online, and it's been really ugly, has been between Christians who affirm the same basic principles and maybe have a disagreement over, do we wear masks? Do we not wear masks? And what do we make of this political scenario? How do we approach the issue of social justice in our communities? And so, yeah, that's been hard. And I think when I press in on our pastors in Acts 29 and ask them about why are they so tired, it has far more to do with the fact that they feel like they've been a referee for the past, 18 months and warring factions within their own churches. And so, you know, I think we have to be really simple with our messaging. I think the limitations of social media don't lend themselves to the nuances of some of the more important conversations that have to be had in the church. So I would encourage anybody who's producing content, make sure the more controversial things that you're sharing probably have a lot of written backup or audio or video recording that allows you to nuance things. The other thing that's going on, Eric, that I think is really significant that we shouldn't lose sight of, I think there's more institutional mistrust today than there's ever been in my 30 years of ministry. And so it's not just what you say, it's how you wield your influence and authority that people are really paying close attention to. And so, you know, I think for leaders being available, being approachable, leading in a way that's very authentic and transparent, regardless of the size of the organization, is really a big deal right now, because it feels like people are coming through the door with assumptions, and you're really guilty until you can prove otherwise. And so there's just a lot of institutional mistrust. And I think we've seen, you know, coupled with this brutal pandemic and a lot of infighting within the church, it feels like just a steady stream of our prominent leaders are failing and falling. And so I just think we're in this weird season of a real trying season of what does it look like to have integrity in what you say? And how can you, as you lead an institution, how can you wield power in a way that's empowering? It reflects the model of Jesus, which isn't domineering and controlling and clandestine and backroom things, but it's very much transparent and open and empowering of people.
Yeah. Well, and that's where, you know, being with you, those 4 years right out of college for me, you were just a little bit ahead of me. You know, I think that was your first church plant to help nice. With.
Oh, you had to endure my terrible rookie mistakes. I'm sorry. If I haven't apologized enough, I want to tell you I'm sorry again. And please extend that to Deborah and the kids as well.
you're kind. We actually learned a lot from you and, you know, working with you and of course, your brother-in-law, Norm, and Gary Irby. And I mean, I think you've always been really good at communicating clearly. And, you know, we had a tough challenging season those 4 years, and yet we, you know, that church prevailed and met and reached lots of people. Then you went off to New Mexico and you did plant a church, which then became part of the Mars Hill church family. And then ironically, that little building we were at, I don't know if you remember this or if we've talked about this in a while, but I think my first office at that building eventually was Mark Driscoll's office.
That's exactly right. It's totally right.
Bought that building.
I went back to that building years after we had left Seattle, and I think you and Deborah had left as well, and could not believe it was a Mars Hill campus, because that wasn't the original intent for that building, at least that we had as we left. And so, it's a bizarre world you live in, that you could go back to the same building in two different churches in two different broad eras, and it's still there. So yeah, the name over the door was Mark Driscoll. That used to be the office of Eric Bryant.
That's right. Well, and the reason I even brought that up is just what you said about, you know, transparency and leadership. I mean, you've been featured in this new podcast, What Killed Mars Hill? And I think your contribution has been really meaningful to that podcast. Tell us about, you know, what did you learn through that process? And then, you know, you've been with Matt Chandler at The Village. Like, you've been a part of some big prominent churches. All churches have their good days, all have their bad days, all have challenges to face. What are some of the things you've learned about communicating in this cynical season? I mean, places like Seattle are filled with cynics, you know, and people who are skeptical too. But just talk a little bit more about that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, that's so much there that I could touch on. But maybe I'll focus in on a couple of things that I think you've embodied well over the years that I've known you, Eric. Leadership culture is so important. And so the confusing thing about Mars Hill, and I think this comes out of the Rise and Fall of Mars Hill podcast that CT is doing. So many good things were going on. People were having transformative experiences with Jesus left and right. And you know Seattle well. You live there. It's not a place that's quick to see a lot of conversions, a lot of change. And so there's a supernatural dynamic happening there where we were watching life change day in and day out in our gatherings, in our small groups, in coffee shops, in bars, and everywhere else. And yet, behind the scenes, the leadership culture was really fractured. There's a lot of infighting, a lot of dysfunction. And what I learned is, number one, it's easy to look past those kind of broken things when it feels like blessing is happening, when it feels like the Lord is at work, and you can almost gloss over the dry rot in the wall or paint over it is probably a better analogy, when you shouldn't. And then the second thing I will tell you is, and I've seen this play out multiple other places, is when the leadership culture is fractured in a church, it's only a matter of time before the entirety of that church is feels that and suffers from that. So looking at it a different way, I would say in a positive sense, what can we take away from that? If you're leading a church or you have a leadership role in a church, building a strong, healthy community among your leaders, dealing with each other in a way that's loving and respectful and deferential and kind could be perhaps the best way to build a healthy church, if that helps at all. And then the other thing about, you know, the other thing about, and I'd say this was true of your time and my time together in Seattle, is when you live in places like Seattle and now in a place like Austin, in many ways, you get to see the future. You know, you get to see the things that are coming. And so it's interesting being back in a little bit more of a conservative place now, where the things that are being wrestled with here in the culture of DFW, man, I saw those things happening in Seattle 10 years ago. So you kind of see the future. But yeah, I would say, you know, if there's a lesson to take away from Mars Hill, no matter how fast your church grows, no matter how many people attend, no matter how much influence you have beyond the walls of your church among other churches or even in your city, if at the core of your church there's dysfunction among your leaders and your leaders really don't know how to, as you said earlier, taking all those commandments and boiling them down to love God and loving each other, if that's not going on among your leadership team, you have a problem that ultimately will be fatal among the entirety of the church. So pay close attention to that would be my, you know, what I've learned personally and what I would encourage anybody to think about.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that. And I think even in your, you know, your story, the way you just kind of recapped some ways that we could learn from it, it's a great point because you were in New Mexico, you know, you were a part of a church plant that became a campus. So it's, you're not necessarily in the middle of what's happened behind closed doors. And then once you did move there, not too long before, you know, things changed dramatically and sending out all these campuses as church plants. I think that's a really good warning for us. You know, we're listening to it with my staff and, you know, we just spent some time praying for those affected and for Mark and Grace and, you know, just even wept over how the enemy wants to divide and wants to take us down. You know, and in a different scenario, you were just at the Village and before moving into Acts 29, and you guys intentionally took campuses and turned them into church plants, you know, not in the midst of, you know, trying to deal with what was happening in Mark's life, but talk about some of the positives of seeing kind of church planting through campusing in this way. I'm just curious because you have seen some bigger churches going towards that.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I would say at the Village, and that decision, both those decisions to launch campuses and then take those campuses and turn them into autonomous churches happened before I ever showed up. And so I've asked a lot of questions like, what was the evolution of that? How did that happen? But I would say there were two advantages to that plan. One is you can start with a large base, meaning that if a church has probably like much like Gateway does in Austin, if a church has a good reputation, the community has established a real solid base of operation, then launching campuses through sending out people that might be in those locations, you're not starting from zero like so many church plants do. You've figured out a lot of the internal programming. You've built up leaders that have a maturity together. They have really good relationships with each other. So there's real strength in doing that. And then there's just people find those expressions pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So in a place like DFW, where people are moving in from all over the country, we have about, and I'm sure this is the same thing in Austin. We have like, someone told me recently, a developer that I know said about 60,000 Californians are moving in every year. You know, so we have people coming from all over the country, particularly the West Coast. People show up at the Village Church because they've heard of it. They know of it. It's got a reputation. So there's advantage. You can start from a place where you can quickly, it's not just purely a growth thing, Eric. It's a depth thing. You can start with some pretty good depth because of what's going on. Advantage then to taking those campuses and making them autonomous churches, they can become much more contextualized to their communities. I've seen that happen with the church that used to be part of the Village Church, or campuses, I should say, that are now independent churches. Different names, they're much more localized, local leaders stepping up. They're able to take the good things of the Village Church and perpetuate those things, and they're able to add things and change things that need to be changed so they can be contextualized. And so, again, I don't know how this cultural mistrust of big things is going to play out. You know, I don't know if that's really true among the people that we're trying to reach. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. If it is, then you could make an argument that smaller is better. Smaller is more effective. Having leaders that you can be with in person and ask hard questions and receive ministry from might be kind of critical. So, there are a few churches that are taking that model and doing it now. You know, leadership development is really central in that. You've got to make sure that you're preparing those that you're eventually going to release from being in a campus context to becoming independent church leaders to think a little bit differently and to do things a little bit differently than you do if you are a satellite in a bigger system.
Yeah, that's really good. You know, it's interesting during this pandemic, our church, which is, you know, all around Austin area, but we're also in three different counties. We had... And they're politically very different. In my part of town, it's mostly progressive and liberal. You know, 85% of my neighborhood voted for Hillary in 2016. Whereas in Williamson County, it's a lot more 50-50 red and blue. And so there's this interesting thing happened that all of a sudden, you know, our plan for the pandemic could not be for all of our campuses. Like we literally had to come up with a different plan in terms of rolling out even times on Sundays. Like there is something contextual that you've just brought up, I think is really important. It's being even almost hyper contextual to your neighborhood. And I do think that's part of the beauty of like still campusing the way we are. As long as you don't have too many things that are non-negotiable at every campus, you know, but there's certain things that you can share, like HR and the website and a culture, that leadership culture that you described is so, so important. I do think it is going to be interesting. In Austin, for example, we tend to hate anybody, any chain restaurants that come to town.
Right.
And so
Chili's is not very popular in Austin.
They all die, you know, in South Austin, especially, where Keep Austin Weird was actually a phrase to say buy local, shop local, you know, stay away from everything else. In fact, when In-N-Out was being built near my house there near downtown, I mean, go back to Cali was, you know, graffitied on it.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm going to try to keep that thing open, but
I was going to say, that's gotta be hard for you because I know your California roots.
I do have some, although most people I tell in Austin that I did grow up in Texas. So I start there. Yeah. I don't usually leave it. I just got here from California 10 years ago.
But
the reason I bring it up is it's interesting in Austin, Gateway is seen as local. So we like local chains like Torchy's and Chewy's started here.
Sure.
So we're okay with those kind of chains. But what's interesting is there is still an organizational mistrust you brought up. There are people that prefer kind of our campus model because we stay smaller, you know, and don't want to go to a giant building with lots of people. And that might even be hard to pull off post-pandemic as well. You know,
thank you
for sharing that. I would love to just one last question. Any other things that you've been learning in the season, in the role that you have with so many pastors looking to you for guidance and help? What are some other things, any other advice you might have for us?
You know, I think, Eric, you know, it's probably too early to call this one, but it's something I see on the horizon is at least in Acts 29, we're probably going to have to reassess some of our strategies. You know, our doctrine doesn't change. I don't even know that our philosophies of ministry are going to vary that much. But, you know, we had in the old days of Acts 29, we would have boot camps and we would bring out our prominent guys. The room would be filled. You would have church plant. This is a little bit of an exaggeration, but 100 deep ready to be assessed. Those days are gone, even though they feel like they were just five years ago. They were actually 20 years ago. And I think that, what does that mean? I think in this post-Christian context, discipleship takes on an even more important, role in the church. It's got to be the lifeblood of the church. And I honestly think because there isn't a pool of candidates ready to go start new churches just that are out there that are student ministers and college ministers and children's ministers and other churches, we're going to have to disciple, probably those that are going to be sent out by Gateway here in the next 15 years are probably sitting in student ministry today. And you're going to have to disciple those women and those men to think as missionaries in a post-Christian context and send them out accordingly. So I think discipleship takes, it's always been the lifeblood of the church. Jesus said it would be, but I think in our context, it's taken on more meaning than ever. And we really need to embrace. What does that look like holistically?
That's great. Thank you, Dave. I really enjoyed
getting
together with you. Thanks for the insights. Keep up the great work. Tell Kara and the family hello.
Can't wait to come see you in Austin. We'll go someplace weird. How does that sound? Is that a deal?
It's great. Sounds great.
All right. Great. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks for joining us on the Post-Christian Podcast. More resources available at ericbryant.org.